And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Bobby D. from Escondido.
Thank you. I'm Bobby D., and actually I'm from Temecula. I'm an alcoholic by grace. How y'all doing tonight? Wow, it's a big group. Wonderful group. It's kind of nice. AA is the only place I know of that you can throw a buck in the basket and get all the coffee and cake you want. It's kind of nice, isn't it? Well, I made a few notes here. Actually, I made a book here. The problem is when I got sober, they told me I burned out a lot of brain cells. I didn't think I had that many to burn out anyways, but they told me that the few good ones I had left were probably going to take a while to come back. And I got sober in 1995, and they've taken a while to come back, so, but that's okay. I'm blessed to be here at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a big part of my life. It's been a wonderful ride so far. And I want to say hello to the newcomers and welcome. And I want to say thank you to the old-timers, because all you people, that's what shows me that this still works. It's been working for a long time. When Bill and his buddy there got together, it was two alcoholics helping each other out. And, you know, it still works that way today. I was born back east. Half Italian, half Irish, born to be a drunk, they tell me. And early on, I kind of knew there was a little something different with me. I seemed to be the kid. My dad and my mom, I got an older brother and an older sister, and they didn't seem to have the difficulties in life that I did. They could control things, and I couldn't. I started drinking pretty young. You could drink back east. You could drink a little wine with your meal. And I really enjoyed that warm, fuzzy feeling. I gotta tell you, it's a wonderful thing, and it made me believe that I didn't necessarily have to be who I was. And if you're anything like me, being comfortable in your own skin, sometimes it's still very tough for me. But I keep trudging on, and I keep trying to do the right thing, take the next indicated step. I was born about an hour out of Boston in Waltham, Massachusetts, and I had a lot of Italian family. We hung out with most of the Italian side of the family. They were all closer. And every week, we'd be eating. Italians eat a lot. They drink a lot. They have a good time. I love them. We always have dinner at somebody's house. So there was always a lot of good wine around and things like that. And whenever I could, even at a very... You know, I was about this big and about this big around. And I'd kind of stick my head over the wherever the booze was and sneak a drink. I don't think any of you guys ever did that, but I did that. Both my grandfathers, the Italian and the Irish, both of them were very hardcore alcoholics, and they died very young, in their 60s. Back east they have stoops. And my Italian grandfather, my papi, we used to call him, he would just sit up there basically and drink all day. That was his thing. But I can remember going to my grandmother's house, and she used to call me her little Ponchaco, her little fat boy. And she'd put me up there, and I think I got a resentment against that. I don't know. I'll have to go back and write that down somewhere. But I loved going to that house. The food, oh my God, the food. The food was fantastic. And they drank a lot, and that's just the way it was. When I was 10 years old, my mom and dad moved us out to California, 1968. I was 10 years old. I'm going to move this a little bit closer. There we go. That was 1968, and when we hit California, I was like, man, this is cool. There's ocean all over the place. Everybody's running around in shorts. No more, 6 feet of snow where I had to walk barefoot to school every day and 26 miles away from home. And before I did that, my dad made me shovel the driveway and all that kind of stuff. That's what it felt like to me anyways, but I, you know, kind of beefed it up a little bit there, but that's how it was. Back east, there's a lot of snow. It's a lot of snow and it's hot. There's a lot of seasons, though, so there's a lot of good parts to it, too. I had a lot of cousins that were on the, let's just say that that side of the family had money and mine didn't. So I got used to, I never went on Fed, I'll tell you that. I always ate some kind of way. My dad used to, his first job was a milkman. Actually, he had a couple of jobs as a milkman. He used to take me to this one particular house where there was an Italian gentleman there who, as soon as I used to sit, you know, they had them big milk trucks back then. There was a place where I could sit, and I'd go with him about 4 o'clock in the morning, and these little Italian ladies would come out, and they'd, you know, what a cute kid, and do all this kind of stuff, and feed me. I love going with the old man. I'm like, Dad, you know, I'd wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning. Dad, is it time to go? You know, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. But my dad used to deliver to some of these guys back east, these Italian guys. And I don't like the stereotype Italian people or any people, but let's just say they had a lot of different businesses going on. What does it say? You know what I mean? But they liked me. And I think my dad recognized that kind of young when, about 9 years old, my father used to take me to, he had the kid next door, his name was Bobby Serra, and he used to take me down to play guitar. And it cost a dime for the lesson, and my mom would give Bobby a quarter so we could stop and have something to eat on the way home. But we never made it to the guitar lessons, we always made it to the pool hall. And the pool hall was great. I loved it. Excuse me. There were these guys there, and they were all in these shiny suits, and they drove big cars, and they never seemed to work or anything. They just always had a bunch of money, and I think kind of that's when my old man said, "Let's move to California," because he figured that I would probably hang out with them as much as I idolized them. Even back then, though, I knew that something was different about me. I mean, I went to the Catholic school and did all that kind of stuff, nothing against Catholic people. Hey, whatever, it's all good. But for me, they had this little thing with me. They used to take these. I don't know if you remember them. I know no one here is my age, but think back. Maybe your parents told you about it. These big bars, big blocks of soap. They're about this big around, about this thick. And the nuns used to think that that would be a good way to keep me in line by maybe about 3 or 4 of them would grab a hold of me and they'd start shoving these bars of soap down my throat. And I don't know if I'm the only one that got thrown out of Catholic school for hitting a nun. Funny part, I couldn't reach your chin, so you can imagine where I stopped there. Ah, God bless her. She was quite a lady. They always seemed like they were about 96 years old. But I'll tell you what, they were tough. They were tough. And then they'd send me to Father What's-His-Name. And Father What's-His-Name he was bigger, but I figured I could still go a couple rounds with him. But by that point, it was like they'd just go to my sister and say, "Hey, take Bobby home." That went on about every other day, and I remember one time that I was trying to be good. I was trying to be good. I was like, just like I tried to control my drinking, I was trying to be good. And I'm sitting in this little, you got these little uniforms on and stuff, and I, you know, little fat kid in these weird little short things. I never was real impressed with that. To this day, I have to leave my shirts unbuttoned. I kid you not, because they made you do this, and it was always choking me, and I just couldn't handle it. To this day, I leave them unbuttoned, but I lost my train of thought. Which, there we go, that short-term memory loss. Anyways, it was amazing to me to get kicked out of that school as many times as I got kicked out. I told my dad, why do I even go to school? I got kicked out every other day. You know, and I'm just a kid. I'm just a young kid. But the day I was trying to be good, one of these kids stood up and the nun went outside of the classroom and one of the kids got up and said a bad word. He said the S word. And I went, ooh, he's going to get it. So the nun came back in and the kids were laughing and she asked one of the young girls there, what happened? And the young girl said, Bobby said shit. And I went, oh, God, here we go again. So she drugged me out by my ears. And let's just say I went home that day, too. So it always seemed like to me, like no matter what went on, I kind of got the worst end of it. But, you know, I probably deserved most of it. According to my old man, I did. My dad, who was a wonderful man, a great man, one of my best friends, he'll be 80 years old this year, next month, as a matter of fact, and we've become the best of friends, and that's all due to the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous. Taught me how to be a son. Taught me how to be a son. My ma's always been wonderful. She went through her own things, too. She was very sick when we were a kid, and back then, the doctors would just give you a lot of drugs to try to take care of whatever condition it was. My mother had suffered from migraine headaches, which I did too, and I had epilepsy as well. So they started me very young on a bunch of pills. I've been taking pills since I'm 3 years old. And, you know, it was a trip because it was like a part of life for me. That's just what it was, to control the epilepsy. When I hit 14, I kind of outgrew it. But my mom struggled with a whole lot of stuff because of her headaches. There were times when my dad worked so hard, and my mom worked hard, too, trying to take care of her. She was sick. Sometimes they would give her an injection, and she'd be out for a couple of days, just out cold. And the biggest thing for me was to be able to make it to her room with a cup of coffee without spilling it. If I could do that, I really thought that I did a good thing for my mom. And to this day, I'm very lucky that they're still in my lives. And over the last 13 years, they've got to see me in sobriety, and I have a wonderful relationship with them. If you don't have a relationship, or if you're struggling with relationships, if I can urge you just to, you know, there's different steps that we use here. Do them steps, man, and get it right. Because I have some friends that didn't have a chance to get it right before people that they love passed on, and now they struggle with it quite a bit, you know. And I just urge you that fourth and fifth step, they're wonderful steps, they're neat things. All 12 steps are great steps, and it's just something that, as alcoholics, that someone came up with these, you know, we know who came up with them, but the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous are a wonderful way of life, you know. And then, you know, having that spiritual part in your life. Excuse me. That spiritual part of your life is very, very important to me. As a matter of fact, I spend a lot of time reading this book here, and I read another book, too. And a lot of it has the same things to say. And, you know, I for me, the spiritual part of it is a huge part of this program for me. God loves me, and God loves you. And you know, I'm not a guy that's into religion. I am a guy that's into relationship. I have a relationship with the God, and He loves me, and I know that now. And before, I didn't. I thought that any little thing I ever did wrong, God's going to get you for that. And that's how I felt. Alcoholics Anonymous showed me that wasn't true. Other places that I attend showed me that that's not true, that God loves me. He loves me just the way I am, you know. And He loves you just the way that you are. And He's a forgiving God. And, you know, I mean, look at us. He's got to have a sense of humor. I mean, look at us, right? We're all here today on a Saturday night, a beautiful Saturday night in Southern California. And we're inside this neat little building. And we're talking about our drinking days. And we're not a glum lot. We have a lot of fun. There's so much fun in sobriety. I mean, for the past 13 years, I've done things I never thought I'd be able to do. And if I was drinking, I wouldn't be able to do them. All right, back in 1990, I won an Elvis Presley contest over the radio. That's another part of my story. And I beat the guy who won 5 years in a row, and I won a trip to Graceland, but I was still drinking. So I said, you know, give me the money. What any good alcoholic would say. And they did. They gave me the money, and they gave me some other stuff. So I didn't get to go to Graceland. So I didn't get to see all that stuff. But, you know, when I was always seeking that attention, you know, and I guess a lot of us alcoholics do seek attention. I know I did for a very long time, even as a kid. And, you know, the drinking part, I don't really go into a big drunkalogue because, you know, for me, I drink, I get drunk, I fall down, no problem. You know, everybody knows that. Drinking for me was just a part of way of life. When I came to California, like I said, about 10 years old, beach, sand, and a whole bunch of bikinis. I was like, Lord, you just bring me to heaven. I mean, it was wonderful. I mean, you know, you could just run around all year long in your shorts and do stuff. But right away, I hooked up with the people that, you know, drank and did drugs. And I became part of their little group, and that's the way it stayed. By the time I got to be, I was a pretty good baseball player. My dad coached me up until I couldn't play organized ball anymore. My dad was a good athlete, and he coached me all them years, and he stood by me, and he thought that maybe I could do something with some kind of a sports thing, but booze was more important to me. I could not wait to, I did graduate. I went to a continuation high school. It was kind of cool. You'd get there at 8 o'clock, leave at 9 o'clock, because if you got home by 9:30, you could watch the reruns of Happy Days. So, and there was two of them in a row, so I always liked the Fonzie, well, what can I say? hey, you know. I always thought that Fonzie and Rocky must have been cousins. They talked the same, hey, who is you, and all that kind of stuff. But they had the same kind of dialect. But I kind of grew up that way in the 50s. Even though I was born in 58, my mind was stuck in the 50s, you know. I just loved that way of life. It seemed like everything was easier. It just seemed like it. I don't know. I wasn't there, but they tell me it was. Frank Sinatra. I like Frank Sinatra. Uncle Frank, we call him. I like all them guys, and of course I like the rock and roll, but California had a whole bunch of concerts, a whole bunch of things to go to, but everything revolved around drinking. I mean, that's just what it was. Drinking, drinking, and drinking. At 15 years old, I had been drinking for several years straight every day, and I took my first shot of heroin when I was 15, and by 16 I was strung out on heroin. And I don't get into all that. It's just the way it was. I stayed that way for 20 years. Of course, with my alcohol. I had two types of friends. I had the ones that did the drugs and the ones that drank. I fit real well in each one, but I had to have my drink. And that's just the way I was. You know, life was like that for me. And drinking was just a part of life, man. I mean, this feels different. It doesn't feel natural. You know, not drinking doesn't feel natural to me. It's something that I had to work on to not do, you know. And drinking, because everybody does it, came from a family that drank, it just was a thing to do. And everybody did it all the time, you know. And when I came to California, and I love California. I love California. We all picked the people that we hang out with, and the ones that I hung out with were the ones that were a bunch of knuckleheads like me. And us knuckleheads did whatever we had, whatever it took to get as much booze as we could every day and other things to go along with it, and that's just the way it was. I missed the 60s. I was 10 years old in 68, but I got to enjoy the hippies for a while. And I'm a child of the 70s, and, you know, I did every drink, all the drinking. When it became a problem to me, I kind of knew it was a problem when I was 16 years old because I was going to every liquor store and stealing from them. You know, I'd sit there, and most of us alcoholics have a pretty good rap. I could sit there and talk to the person in charge there while I was robbing him blind, you know, of his booze and everything else. I'm not proud of that. That's just the way it was. And life went on, and you know, all through the 70s, all my friends and I, that's about all we did was drink. You know, and I knew that I still knew about this relationship that I had with God, and I knew that God was keeping me around for some reason. I overdosed 7 times on heroin. One time I was out for 4 minutes, and they say you're supposed to be dead when that happens. They actually pulled the whatever it is over my head, and they took me in the ambulance, and some kind of way I woke up kicking and screaming. And it had happened so many times that this time the police were at the hospital, and I could see them walking around underneath the curtain. I could see them in their boots, and they were talking about me. And so I ripped all the IVs out of my arms, went underneath the person beside me's little stall, said, "Hi." And he's in the bed going, you know, "Who is this weirdo?" And I go around, I slip out, and I get out. So I didn't have to go to jail that time, and I escaped jail a whole bunch of times. Then I started getting into where I'd start getting caught, and it wasn't any fun, and I knew that was going to be my life. And the boys that I hung up with, there was this girl that I liked, and her three brothers were my three best friends. And them being my best friend, the girl that I liked, their sister, it was really hard hiding that relationship. But somehow I did. And we ended up getting married when she was 19 and I was... And actually I'm 5 years older than her, so... When she was 19, I'm sorry, we got married. And we had a child when she was 20. And now I have 5 grandchildren. Who are the joy of my life. And yesterday I got a call from my son. He was in tears. I said, "What's up, son?" My oldest son, Bobby Jr. And his new fiance said that they had lost the baby. She was about 10 weeks along. And they lost the baby. The baby didn't have no heartbeat. And, you know, as terrible as that is... The part that made me feel good was I was there for him to call me and talk to me about it and his ma. That same feeling that, I mean, it's really difficult to talk about them things, but through the grace of God and what you guys have taught me, the words came out to comfort him. And that made me feel really good. If I was drinking, that wouldn't have been happening at all. He wouldn't even have called me. He saw me go through the whole craziness his whole life, and he saw me get sober. And he said he likes me better when I'm sober. Even though it's a sad situation, you know, I probably wouldn't have been able to deal with it if I was drinking during this period too, because that's such a tough thing. I've never lost a child. So I don't know how that feels, but it must be just a horrible, horrible thing. And I think about the things that I would cry about, and it's probably nothing like losing a child. So my heart goes out to him. And somebody told me that this goes over the internet. Is that true? So, son, if you're out there, God bless you. I love you, and hang in there. By the time I was in my mid-20s after I married my wife and all that stuff. We divorced 3 years later. And I spent the whole 80s trying to get sober. Went to all the rehabs a couple of times. And I went to this one rehab where they said, "We're going to teach you how to drink sociably." I said, "Man, this is my kind of program." When do we get to that part, you know? Didn't work out real well. They ended up asking me to leave after about 9 months. And I don't know if my wife is watching this, but they asked me to leave because I got involved with a girl. We went out and got some booze, and the whole thing started again. And they kicked me out. I went back again about 2 months later and stayed about another year. And a whole bunch of things happened during the 80s, but I kept trying to get sober. I wanted to get sober. And, you know, I could get sober. But to stay sober, that was the hard part. You know, and they told me, well, it's easy, just don't drink. The hell it is. What's easy about it? That's what we do. We drink. Well, I went to the county jail. Warden threw a party at the county jail. I went to the county jail. Excuse me, just had to throw that in there. I always wondered why Elvis did that. Warden threw a party at the county jail. Any county jail I ever went to, they didn't throw no parties, you know what I mean? Oh, there was a blanket party once, but that's a different story. Joking. When I was in there, the people from H&I, they came in. And I was just tired of being locked up in that dang cell. And they bring these two guys in. Two program guys. One of them is Bob B. And the other one is Carlos R. And they shared their story. And everything they said sounded like they were talking about me. I'm like, how did these guys find out about me? I don't even know these guys. Everything they said, though, I related to. So one of them gave me a big book, and he says, hey, man, read this thing. And I said, all right. So I went back to my little cell there, and I started reading it. And I got into it. And every time I had a chance to go to a meeting, I went. And I cried out to God. I said, God, you know, I don't want to get out there and do the same things again. Because that's what would happen to me. I'd start drinking, then I'd start going, doing the other things, and everything would be a big mess. When I got locked up that last time, I was drinking several quarts a day. I had a heroin habit. I had a methadone habit and a cocaine habit. And I kid you not, for 90 days I didn't sleep. I didn't think that people could not do that, but I didn't sleep for 90 days. And I was like, Lord, I'm tired of this. I'm tired of this mess. If there's another way, you got to show it to me. So what does he do? He sends in two long-haired biker guys from AA. And they helped save my life. They helped save my life. You know, it's funny that the people that we meet, and some people go, well, I don't have a lot in common with that person, but I think we do. I think we all have a very lot in common. And the main thing, I guess, is drinking. I don't know, but there's a lot of things, too, where our feelings, our emotions, and it's said that we think differently. We do. We do think differently. I know I do. It's difficult for me to stand in front of some places and speak because I don't know if I'm going to offend anybody. And I'm not about offending people. I'm about sharing from my heart and the truth. And I know that God has set me free and from the bondage of alcoholism. And I'm blessed. I'm blessed every day to be here, to be sober. I wake up in the morning and I say, you know, God, yesterday I didn't drink. If I can just catch one more day, it'll be a good day. When I got sober, I opened a business. About a year after I got sober, I opened a business. And the business took off. And it got very big very quickly. And then we formed a group called Elvis and Friends. And we go around to rehabs and stuff, and we do different shows. And
It was great. We had a great time. We did a lot of AA things in North County, and we opened some restaurants, and we just had a good time. The best times we had, though, was when we did them for men and women in sobriety, just to show them, like I said earlier, we're not a glum lot. We can have fun here, and we don't have to drink. And I think that's one of the very best parts of my sobriety in my life, and some of them guys are right here in front of me, and they're my best friends. And they're my best friends because they will tell me when I'm going to the left and I need to be going to the right. When I opened this business, I had a lot of friends that were there, you know, for other reasons. I made a lot of money. I never made any money in my life because I was too involved and I had to get that next drink. All the money that I had went to the next drink. You know, simple as that. Hi. Can you hear us now? Oh, you gotta love it. You gotta love it. And I made a lot of money, and man, I got a lot of friends. I got a lot of friends when I was making that money. They were there, and it was wonderful. And I was able to enjoy a lot of that money with my friends, and we had a good time. Due to the well, they don't like to call it a recession, but I think it's a recession. Due to the times that we're in right now, and some bad choices that I made with my money and trusting in people that I thought would help me take care of that money. It didn't work out that way. So I went from having stuff to not having stuff. But AA never told me that I was going to get rich and famous and, you know, drive big fancy cars and live in big giant houses. And, you know, there was one time a few years back where I owned three houses and I drove a Corvette and I had three Corvettes at once. And, you know, it's like I'm a good alcoholic. I get the money, I spend it, you know. And that stuff never made me happy. It made me look real cool, but it didn't make me happy. I learned a lot of lessons. I don't have to worry about that now because all that stuff's gone. So it went south. As a matter of fact, I had a Cadillac left, and I turned it in the other day, and they said, Mr. DeSisto, didn't you just turn in a convertible Corvette? I said, yeah, I'm the same guy. They said, now you're turning in a Cadillac? And I said, yep. You want to sell me another one? I'll probably turn that one in by the end of the year, too. So, but that's just the way life is, you know. Like I said, Alcoholics Anonymous didn't promise any of that stuff. It's just, the main requirement here is that we don't drink. Just don't drink. And that guy with the long hair on my two angels, Bob B. and Carlos R., they used to tell him, no matter what, Bobby, don't drink. I've been to a lot of different surgeries. Back surgeries, nose surgery, all kinds of different surgeries. I had a stomach bypass about 7 years ago. All of that in sobriety, and I never had to take a drink. And then came the medication. We don't like to talk about medication at AA. I took medication because I was in a lot of pain. And one day a friend of mine called me up and he said, Bobby, I don't understand an effing word you're saying. And I knew right then and there that my next stop was the bar. Now, I was in serious, serious pain with the back surgeries that I had and the other things. But I knew just by my friend telling me that if I didn't stop that mess, that I would end up at a bar and I would end up drunk and the whole thing would start again. So I took them pills and I flushed them down the piece of loo. And thank God for that friend. Because, you know, when you're at that point and you're in a lot of pain, you don't know what to do. And the Big Book of Alcoholics tells us that sometimes we seek outside help because we have to. And I was able to do that and get my blood pressure under control and different things like that. I had to have that operation, and I was a guy that since 1990 tried to stay very physically fit, and when I got out of jail, I was very physically fit, and I stayed that way for a long time, and then I was going to the gym 3-4 hours a day doing them things, you know, because I was kind of, the book talks about replacing, you know, going, getting into all the health stuff, and then that's cool. Health is great. But, you know, I kind of went for it a little too much, and I was getting all big, and I look in the mirror, and I say, damn, that guy looks pretty good. I wasn't married then, you know, and I was, like, really feeling good about myself. I had a good business. I had some girlfriends. I had all the things that I thought that would make me happy, and then I broke my back, and I had to have this operation, and I went from 210 pounds... In 90 days, I was up to 345 pounds. The reason why is because I couldn't work out at all. Didn't mean that I still wasn't hungry. You know, when you're working out that much, you eat a lot. So now I got this messed up back, and my blood pressure is just so high that I'm going to die. Doctor tried all these different things to get my blood pressure down. Nothing worked. And he said, Bob, you got to have that operation. I said, I don't want that operation. He said, you got to have it. You're going to die. That's your choices. Take the operation or you're going to die. So I asked my wife, how much insurance do you have on me? She said, not enough. Get the operation. So I got the operation, and, you know, since then I've lost 150 that pounds, so... So that's a good thing. And my blood pressure is under control. And I'll tell you, I had a lot of friends in the program that were there for me and helped me through it. A lot of this program, in the beginning of this program, I had a whole lot of sponsees. And I did that for a long time. And I got into, you know, giving back. And this whole thing's about giving back. What we have freely received, we freely give back. That's another book that I read, too. And... it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing to give back to people. It's a wonderful thing to be able to share your experience, strength, and hope. Because that's what we're all about. We're about our experience, our strength, and our hope. And the hope that we have here is that we never have to feel the way we felt when we walked in these rooms again. We don't ever have to feel that way if we don't want to. You hear a lot about relapse prevention and relapse this and relapse that. For me, it's like if I decided to go out and have a drink, I don't know if it would be relapse. I think maybe for me, it would be a choice because I know better now. I know better. When stuff hits the fan, and it does, and it has through the last few years, I can either go to a meeting or I can go to the bar. I have to make that choice right then and there. And so far, I've chose to go to a meeting or hang out with a friend. Who's sober. And there are those slippery places, you know. And, you know, every time you walk into 7-Eleven, there's beer. So, I mean, if you wanted to do that, you could. But this is an honest program here. And I think that the majority of people that work this program are honest people and good people. And I've met so many wonderful people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that, I just couldn't begin to tell you. The book actually says we're men and women who have recovered. We have recovered from this illness that we got. Put booze in our systems and it does something to us. You know, it just does something to us. And it makes us not good people. I was a very mean drunk. I'm not a tough guy. I was just a mean drunk. You know, I always wanted to be 6'4", you know, 300 pounds. And... that didn't happen. But if you gave me a couple shots of Jack Daniels, damn, I was 6'4", 300 pounds. And I'd usually end up getting into these fights with these people and over stupid stuff. And it was all about drinking. And, you know, I haven't had a fight since I got sober. Well, I had one. That's a guy that laid his hands on my sister. So that's, I'm quite sure you guys agree with me. That's a gimme. Don't lay hands on my sister. Or my family. That's that's a bad thing. But my grandchildren have never seen me drunk. They never seen me take a drink. And I never thought it would be that way. They love me. They call me Oompa. They couldn't say Grandpa, so they call me Oompa. I said, great. I went from a junk to an Oompa Loompa, you know? But I love them all with my heart. And that woman that I divorced, and after 3 years of marriage, I ended up marrying her going on 8 years ago. We got remarried. Love of my life. Meaner than a junk dog, but love of my life. Actually, she's a sweetheart. And, you know, I don't know if she's watching this thing on the web or not tonight, or on the internet tonight or not, but I had to make an amends to her because before I came down here, we had some words, and that ain't cool. And I was told by the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's another thing that I often say too, that I don't like the sun to go down when I'm upset with somebody without saying I'm sorry. So baby, if you're watching, I'm sorry. I had to make a lot of amends when I got sober. A lot of them were very difficult. A lot of them involved money. A lot of them involved just saying I'm sorry. A lot of them involved places that I couldn't go, or they'd lock me up for 20 years. So them ones, my sponsor said, just forget about them ones. I said, write about them, and then burn it up after you're done writing about it. I feel like I'm a blessed person, man, and coming up here and being a speaker here, I love to share my story. I love to share what God and what these rooms have done for me. 12-step rooms are the best place in the world, man. They're the best place in the world. I mean, we got a whole mixed group of all kinds of different people here, but we got that one common factor that we're alcoholics, and we all go through stuff. But I'm sure you could turn to that next person beside you and say, hey, I'm going through something. I'm pretty sure that person would go outside with you and sit there and talk with you for a while about that. And you'd probably be able to work through it or come to some kind of way. I always ask people, hey, how do you go through this? You know, if I'm going through something, they've been through it, I'll ask them, hey, what did you do to get the situation in control? You know? There's a part in here about sex, but I'm going to leave that out. Oh, my God. But, well, we know the 70s, all that kind of stuff. That was, you know. You guys remember that song, Truckin', Got My Chips Cashed In? Was that the Grateful Dead? You remember that one line? Living on Reds, Vitamin C, and Cocaine. Remember that line? I changed it. Now it's chugging and sure, popping Viagra and Rogaine. Wow, what are you going to say? I don't wake up like this, believe me. Takes a while. My wife calls it precision combing. Like with the mirror going, does it look good back there? I have a ball on Alcoholics Anonymous. And that line is funny. I was coming up. You know, I don't know, talking about the Elvis thing, I'm just a big Elvis guy. And like I said, I've done it for years. I have a whole giant Elvis collection and all the stuff. And it's that song that they came up with. You guys heard it on TV, I'm sure. That, what is it now, though? Yeah. Viva Las Vegas. Elvis did that song. Viva Las Vegas. And now it's Viva Viagra. I actually came up with that song, and they stole it from me. But it's amazing how little things in life are just so hilarious to me now. But, you know, gosh, I could go on and on about Alcoholics Anonymous and how wonderful it's been to me. We've got to start wrapping up here, don't we? Okay, if you're here, if you're new, grab somebody up, man. Grab somebody up and talk to them after the meeting. Get a sponsor. Read this book right here. If you don't have money for a book and you need a book today, I'm going to buy you one, so let me know. I don't say that because for any other reason other than I like to buy books for people that don't have one. Simple as that. because this book, there's a lot of good stuff in it. Get a relationship with God. Get a relationship with God, and I promise you, He'll take you through the mess. He'll take you through the mess. And when it gets heavy, we talk about prayer and meditation. The prayer part for me is putting out my stuff. The meditation part is listening. Listening to what God's bringing back to me. And I have quiet time every day that I do that. And I tell you, it's such a wonderful thing. This program was built around spiritual principles. And if nobody's told you that they love you today, I can say it in front of all of you. I love you very much. Every one of you people in this room are special to me. I might not know your names. I may never have a cup of coffee with you, but you're very special to me. I love you. God loves you. Alcoholics Anonymous brought us all here tonight for a reason. Probably not to hear me, but but for a reason. So I just want to say God bless you guys. Have a safe ride home, and thank you so much for letting me share.